As we point out here, you can be anywhere from 2.5 to 4 times as effective if you can work without interruptions. Why is that? It's very simple. If you're working on a production line screwing nuts on bolts and somebody interrupts you, you don't have to ask, where was I? No. You reach over into the bin, pick up another nut, and screw it on the next bolt. That's all there's to it. But that's not the work you're going to be doing. Most of the time, you are going to be sitting there thinking, concentrating, and just when that marvelous idea comes to mind, bing, the phone will ring. Or somebody will say, got a minute. And after you recuperate, what do you say to yourself? Where was I? Who am I? What day is this? You know, things like that. Why? Because your whole train of thought has been lost. And you find that you must go almost to the beginning and work it through again. It is not by accident that a lot of people like to go at work at times when no one else is around, so that they can concentrate and get their work done. Wouldn't it be marvelous to work at that 4 times the efficiency, come in, and within 1 hour do as much as would take you from 8 to noon? Yeah. Now, where will you gain most of the time? You'll continually get interruptions from outside. It would seem to me that if you have any other members on the staff, that's where to work with the closest to cut down interruptions. When I presented this workshop to the Back to the Bible people in Lincoln, they had 120 people in 2 sections. One of the divisions of that corporation decided to put this into practice, and they said, we will continue to field outside calls, even questions from other divisions within Back to the Bible, but we will draw up a contract not to interfere with each other within our own division for 1 hour in the morning, unless it's absolutely, totally necessary. They found it worked so well, they expanded that to 1.5 hours in the morning and 1.5 hours in the afternoon, and they circularized the rest of the organization, said, we suggest you do the same thing. So it would seem to me that the people you work the closest with would be the ones that you try to draw that contract up with. Draw it up in blood. Now, one other thing before we get off that. If you're going to cut down interruptions, one of the things I suggest is that you don't interrupt yourself. Now, how do you do that? You interrupt yourself when you jump from job to job, from task to task. You literally do yourself in. You can't blame others for interruptions if you interrupt yourself. You know, I'm bored with this now. I've been at it a whole 5 minutes, you know. So I want to jump on to something else. The inevitable result is that you're in essence interrupting yourself. So try to concentrate on any given task as long as you can. The next thing we say is use the 10-10 rule of planning. The 10-10 rule of planning really says nothing more or less than this. If you will spend 10 minutes of your day planning your day, you will tend to become 10% more effective. This does not mean that you can spend the first 100 minutes planning and do nothing for the rest of the day. It simply says that as a general rule, you get a heck of a lot more done if you plan your day. So what you need to do then is to draw up a list of the activities that you feel must be done for the day. And then pause. Because what you must do at this point is prioritize. Just because you've written down an item as number one doesn't mean it is really number one. You have to go back through your list and put in sequence the more important factors. And since preaching is number one for me, it always is at the top of the list. It means that I must stick with that task first. I must give that priority time. On the next page, we will say, second next page, we will say, start with A's, not with C's, which is prioritizing. We can tie that in with this 10-10 rule of planning. If we want to ask what's an A, we would say, what's your how? We have to go back to this other sheet and say, what did I choose to make my hows, my major duties? I can find out what an A is very quickly. Does it fit into one of these items? If not, it's a B or a C. If it's a C, I try to postpone it as much as possible. Sometimes paper crosses my desk, and I think it's important enough for me to put on the shelf behind my desk. And during the month, it just grows. And after about 6 weeks or so, sometimes I'll go back through and discard 95% and wonder, why did I ever put it back there? You know what happens with a lot of C's? They disappear. One of the big mistakes we make is to say, I am going to do these C's to get them out of the way so that I can get to my A. But you know why it doesn't happen that way? For the simple reason that C's are rabbits. They multiply. You do one C and there are two in their place. You can bet on it. And then there are four, then 16, and so on. They multiply geometrically. You must continuously fight yourself to stick back to your A's and B's. So you need not only to draw up that list of activities, but you must go back and prioritize. To prioritize means that you're going to have to look at your A as much as possible during the day. One author by the name of Alan Lakin says, use the Swiss cheese method in attacking your A. Suppose you're here now at 5 minutes till noon, six now, but suppose you're at 5 minutes to noon and you're going to break for noon, and you say to yourself, my A will require me an additional 15 hours this week. So I guess I'll do a C. Lakin would say, that's a boo-boo. He says it's better to spend 5 minutes on your A than to do any C. You say to yourself, but I can't spend the 15 hours right now. He says, you don't have to. He says, poke a little hole in it. He says, it is better for you to put your feet up on the chair or on the desk and think about your sermon rather than doing a C. You better spend the 5 minutes that way. You will spend the 5 minutes better that way than doing it the other way around. Now, you must understand that some people won't understand if they see you thinking, you know, because they don't understand this concept. Let me give you an example. They see activity. You see somebody coming down the street, you know, with a cigarette in their mouth. What do you say? What are they doing? Smoking. Is it possible they're also walking? Is it possible they're thinking at the same time? It's conceivable, but we have a tendency to focus in on certain things. There's an old story in management about this one individual who was down the end of a long corridor, his boss at the far end, and he was called to see the boss probably four times in the afternoon, four or five in the morning. And he'd walk down the corridor and everybody'd look and say, boy, he ain't got anything to do. And this got back to the boss and to the subordinate. And the boss said, I have a suggestion. Instead of throwing out some of the paper that crosses your desk in the next few days, let it accumulate. And every time you come to see me, carry that paper with you. Won't be of any value to us. When you get back to your room, you put it down and use it every time you come here. And when he'd walk down the hall, everybody'd say, boy, is he busy. You know, oh, wow, a lot of work to do. You know, so people won't always understand when you're thinking. So close the door, lock it, put your feet up on the desk, and think about your sermon. Don't go to sleep. Think about your sermon. Or another little activity you might use to poke a hole in is to decide which commentaries you're going to, maybe even turn to the pages where you're going to start reading after lunch. You know, just little things like that to move the job ahead. Usually what happens is when we punch little holes into our A's, we discover that they are not quite as overwhelming as they look at us, look to us. So psychologically, it's even useful to do this kind of thing. Well, let's get off of that for a moment and go on to the final item before we break for lunch. We won't go through this little exercise on Busy Berry. That's just sort of a fun thing that you might do for yourself sometime. But the last thing is paperwork. As we said earlier, when you, paperwork, page 27, after sorting, try to handle each piece of paper just once. We said earlier, a clear desk is a mark of an effective executive. You know, one of the neat things about having a lot of paper on our desk is to say, well, some of us called it the comfort index. You know, the thicker the pile of paper, the less likely they can fire you, because who's going to do it, you know? So if I can have enough paper there, it looks imposing. Everybody says, can't get rid of him, can't get rid of her. We'll just not be able to replace that person. Some have called it, however, shoveling smoke. That's what paperwork can get to be. When paper crosses your desk, suppose you start in the morning, you have a stack of paper like this. Sort them into three piles, an A pile, B pile, C pile. And you go back to that priority ranking if you want to find the answer of what's what. You'll know very quickly, because if you know your A, B, C, D, what's the most important to you, your most important how, your next most important, so forth, you can quickly sort whether it's A, B, or C. When you go through your C pile, take it and put it into a C drawer. When it gets full, move it to another drawer further away. This is the kind of paper that, like the announcement from the Hangnail Convention of America, you know, it's interesting, you know you want to attend and all that, but you can read that in the bathtub later on, okay? Go back through your B pile, resort it. It's either going to be an A or a C. When you get your A pile, then work through the paper. Do not, just because you don't like what you see, put it at the bottom of the pile. It's like yeast, it rises. Sooner or later, it's going to be at the top of the pile. And if you do it again, what are you doing? You're interrupting yourself, and you're just extending your time. Like I say, in some cases, I'll just simply write a little note on the paper. I am in a neat position. You know, I just love my job. Because I can say, this is Bob's, this is Phil's. When I first came to Christ Lutheran, I did everything, you know. I thought up the items for the newsletter, for the news, for the bulletin, typed it, ran it off. Used to crank the mimeo and say, as my muscles grew, to the greater glory of God. And he said, you idiot. He said, you idiot. There's so many people out there that can do these things. Fortunately, he let the parish grow and those things got out of my hands. But what I'm saying is, as you go through each item, if it's not good enough to